Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, remembering Krista Duchesne's historic performance in Boston.
I just felt great. Monday was my day. It was the weather that worked for me, and I executed, and yeah, grateful for it.
Canada's running guru, John Stanton.
I call it a privilege to stand around expos and talk to people and get to share some of the stories that they tell me of how running has changed their life and empowered them and made such a positive influence in the way they enjoy life and the way they've overcome obstacles that have been thrown at them.
And getting to know legendary Indigenous runner Tom Longboat.
He's a great runner and a great role model, but to Indigenous people, and especially to people on that reserve that celebrate him to this day, he represented freedom, really.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll look back at Krista Duchesne's third-place finish in the Boston Marathon in April. So memorable. An interview with the founder of the running room, John Stanton. And we'll talk more about the subject of the cover story of the next issue of iRun, Indigenous runner and Boston champion, Tom Longboat. But we're going to get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, who's with us every week on iRun Radio, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
And I know you're very excited about the new issue of iRun that's just about to come out with Tom Longboat on the cover. We've been talking about this for a while. Legendary Canadian Indigenous runner, Boston Marathon champion. And we're so excited to tell his story.
Yeah, an Olympian and everything that he's done and the way he did it and how he changed the sport and he changed the game. And yeah, the issue is just a stunner. I can't wait. Everybody should be seeing it. And we're very proud. And the Boston Marathon just gave us these great photographs that are jammed through the issue of Tommy Longboat. I don't think people have seen actually what he looked like. And he looked, you know, he's got this smile on his face. He just looks like a million bucks. And so we're very proud of the issue and what it stands for and what he stood for and, you know, what the cause is at today.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see these pictures. And Ron Johnson, who has written the story about Tom Longboat for the magazine, you'll be able to see it in stores or check it out on our website. Ron Johnson is going to be on this issue, this edition, I should say, of the show and the podcast, and really learned a lot. Already knew a lot about Tom Longboat, but learned even more during the process of covering his story. So this is somebody that every Canadian should know the story of. So I'm
yeah,
really glad we're sharing it. I would put him up there with Terry Fox and with some of the other great Canadian, legendary Canadian figures in our sport of running. So I'm really glad we're sharing Tom Longboat's story, and I can't wait to see it all come together. These pictures sound pretty cool, the way you've been describing them.
Yeah, it just feels, you know, because we had an artist paint a portrait.
Yeah.
Not exactly a portrait. It's more like, I don't know how you would describe it.
It's a representation of Tom Longboat. Yeah, it's very
okay,
cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a work of art on the cover, so which is great because it's evocative and she's wonderful. But you know, and when you see it, you know, he looks, yeah, I don't know, it's you get a sense of the guy. And, you know, the Boston Marathon is so terrific, and they do so much. You know, it's a great race, but it's also a great organization. So they have the history of running in their archives, and they're very organized, and they're happy to share the stuff, you know. So
yeah,
I'm just pleased as punch.
Well, thank you to them, and thank you, Ben. Let's get to it. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, sir.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, Krista Duchesne on her historic podium finish in this year's Boston Marathon. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run, presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race, the 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa. And you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at irun.ca. Just click on radio. The 2018 Boston Marathon is one that people will remember for a long time. For one thing, of course, the weather was awful. But another memorable component was the performance of Canadian Olympian Krista Duchesne, who ran a terrific race and finished third. We spoke with her just days after that incredible performance. Krista, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on an incredible performance in Boston.
Thanks. It's always nice to speak with you, and now we have another chapter to add to our little book.
Yes, exactly. And look, let's take a step back for a moment, because I remember the last time we spoke, you were talking about how you'd accomplished a lot of your goals, your focus has shifted a little bit, and now you were taking the approach that everything that happens from this point forward is kind of a bonus, right?
Right. I think I maybe said it's the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
I think I'm now saying that the icing keeps getting thicker. I don't know if that's an expression, but that seems to be working.
Sounds good to me. I like a lot of icing on my cake. Tell us a little bit about what you were thinking going into the Boston Marathon, what your plans were, what you were hoping to accomplish before the race and before you heard the weather forecast.
Right, because that's definitely different than what happened the day of. I was hoping that I would go somewhere in the 230s. I knew I wasn't fast enough to go under 230, but I thought I was, you know, in good shape to go under 240. So likely, you know, around 235 would be reasonable on this course. And I had trained for strength and to handle the hills that start later in the race. So doing around the base 30K was a perfect race to prepare me for this. And, so I was confident going into it. My training had gone well, doing a lot of marathon-paced kilometers with Dave in Speed River in Guelph. And, just feeling really good. I had no illness or injuries. Pretty much every time I went to physio and massage, I had to try to think of something they could work on, and there wasn't really anything. And so then got to Boston, and then looking at the forecast, that's when I think a lot of our strategy started to maybe change a little bit.
Yeah, and so what were you thinking then, and what was your goal?
Well, ultimately my goal was top three masters, because, you know, I think I said in the last radio session that if someone like Dina Castor shows up, I probably don't have a good chance of winning the Masters. And then sure enough, I saw a press release that she was going to do it. So, but in the back of my mind, I thought, I still have to get to the line strong and healthy, and so does she and all the other Masters. So it's fair game. And I thought overall, maybe top 15. I think I was kind of the bottom of the John Hancock elite pool, but then there was a sub-elite pool. So that kind of opens up a little bit more to see who your competition will be. So basically top three masters and top 15 overall, I would have been thrilled with. And then that even changed, you know, once we saw what the weather would be like.
Right. And let's talk about the weather for a moment. Have you ever run in anything like that before, run a race like that?
A race? No. I've run a lot of cold races or windy or rainy, but never all three at once.
Yeah. And we should remind people a little bit about your story. Now, am I right that you did the Boston Marathon before many years ago? Is that right?
Yes. But in 2005.
In 2005, but before you were an elite runner, right? And this is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the unique things about your story is you're not somebody who came to this sport, came to elite marathon running because you were successful at middle distance running and you had this great run through high school and college and that kind of thing. Like so many elite marathon runners, you were somebody who was running marathons recreationally, and you qualified for Boston and ran it just like anybody else.
Yep, that's right. Exactly. I ran, played hockey, did different sports when I grew up. Hockey was my main one. Went to the University of Guelph, put running on the side, got back into running, thought I'd like to do a marathon for fun. Everyone said, oh, you have to do Boston. Qualified, did it. Then we had our three kids. And then I always thought it would be neat to go back as an elite, and doing it as a master's would be good eventually, because it doesn't count as, you know, record eligible and you know, trying to break a course record or anything. So it was perfect timing to do it this year, being, you know, not a qualifying year or anything. And to go back as an elite, definitely a different experience, but still that same incredible Boston atmosphere of the marathon.
Yeah. And so what were you thinking about the weather? Was it, were you, like many runners, were you feeling like, boy, I hope this forecast changes. This is kind of discouraging. I don't know how it's going to affect me, all of that?
See, I never trained for speed. That was one of the great things about being with Dave, and this is my first marathon training at sea level with him because I'd gone to Kenya last year, was to kind of throw away the watch and listen to your body. So as the weather, as we knew, it was just going to be miserable. I mean, I think everyone that was racing it, you check the weather, and, you know, probably a week ago, it was just consistently showing rain, and it never changed, and it often does. So everyone knew it was going to rain 100%. So, you know, people didn't love that. It was going to be cold and windy, and I thought, you know, this can work for me. So you're looking at the elite list and Dina Castor being my competition. I thought, some of these elite women are not going to like this. It's not going to do well for them, but I can tough it out. I've trained for strength, and I've done, you know, long runs in Canadian winter weather, and this could be something that would work for me. So when we were on the bus, actually, on the way to the start line, I remember looking at the window. I'm like, oh, it's not raining hard enough. I hope the rain starts. This is my strategy for today.
Okay, so you were the one person hoping for more rain and more miserable conditions, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know Reed, he did well in it too, so yeah. I think it worked well for him. Eric, unfortunately, didn't have such a great day, but I think Reed said to him, hey, you do better in the heat and I don't. So, you know, it was really a great weekend hanging out with them because, you know, we're with the same group, me now being with Dave and Guelph, and Eric's coach from St. FX was there, so Jonathan and Bernie were best friends all weekend, and then Reed's wife Marie was there with little Louie, and just had a really good time as Canadians kind of bonding this weekend, and yeah, it was nice to share our stories, and then Ben interviewed us a few days before the race, and yeah, just a great weekend to be Canadians in Boston, and then of course Toronto was there for the hockey, the playoffs.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think Canada was well represented this weekend.
Absolutely. So tell me how the race went and what you were feeling while you were out on the course. And obviously, you had, as you say, you were well positioned to take advantage of the conditions. And being Canadian, you were used to running in all kinds of different weather. And I think that is one thing that is great about training in Canada. You're not going to get that kind of weather and that kind of experience in so many other places in the world where runners are training.
Right. And my training, I was smart in my training, and I think I did a little bit less busy work this time, less cross training, just focused on getting the quality runs in. I took one complete rest day off a week, which I think worked really well for me. And I'm trying to age gracefully in that, you know, still do the hard work that I need to do, but be wise and let things go that don't necessarily get me toward that goal. So that helped. And, you know, my strategy was to run my race and be strong and be smart. So I didn't want to go out too fast because I know a lot of people go too fast in that, you know, rolling downhill first part of the race and they regret it later. But the first kilometer of the race, we were all together and I was running right beside Shalane and it was over 4 minutes per kilometer. So that's like, you know, jogging for the elite pack. So I thought, well, okay, it's appropriate for me to stay with them because I can handle this. So eventually the pack got a little bit smaller in terms of it wasn't the 40 elite that started. And I did kind of drop off a little bit because I thought, you know, a lot of crazy pacing could happen, surges and that kind of thing. I'm like, I just want to stick with how my body's feeling and just be consistent. So they were in view for quite a while, and then eventually I didn't quite see them, but see, you can see the lights from the motorcycle that accompany them, so that helped.
Right.
So at one point in the race, I could kind of see the lead pack ahead, and I'm like, is that the still the lead pack, and I can see them? That's crazy. And so I almost kind of got up to them, but I thought, no, I'm not going to catch up to them and try to keep up and do this crazy pacing thing. So kind of kept my eye on them. And then I thought I was on my own, to be honest. I thought, okay, the lead pack is dispersed up there. Eventually I'll kind of just make my way and hopefully start picking off one woman at a time. So I did start doing that. And then two American women just flew by me that I didn't know. And I thought, whoa, like they're really flying. And I thought, I've got more to give. Like, I should go with them or keep them in my sight because maybe I could be top 10. So I started to pick up the pace, and then that's when it just got crazy because the lead male was starting to come up. So they come up with the trucks, and they basically say, just stay on one side. Like, they don't want to be hitting people, but you know, they've got the men's coverage to do as well.
Yeah, because so just so people understand, the men start after the women, and then they eventually catch up to some of you and overtake you.
Right. So the sirens and the trucks and the horns and the fans yelling and screaming and the crazy weather, I had kind of this out-of-body experience where you just, it's just like this blur of chaos, but I was still refined and clear and precise in how I was attacking and executing, which was really neat. So I just kept plugging away. My body felt good, kept running. And then the girls ahead of me, those two American women, I could see them kind of pumping their fists. And I thought, why are they celebrating? Like, I mean, this is kind of weird. So I kept watching them. And then all of a sudden, I passed Molly Huddle, who is one of the contenders who potentially for first, one of the top Americans. And I thought, oh, my, this is strange. I'm passing Molly Huddle. What is going on? And then I heard someone say, Shalane is ahead. I passed Shalane. I passed Edna Kiplagat. I passed another African. And that's when I was like, this is crazy. It's this crazy story that's just unfolding right in front of you. So then I just kept plugging away, and then I still saw those two American girls. I'm like, well, I know I can go after them. So I was praying. I'm like, God, just help me beat one of them or two of them. And so I ended up passing the one American woman, and then here I am on Boylston Street, and it's just chaos, the screaming. And then, like, the male was right there, because if you watch the videos with him coming in, you can see my yellow socks. That was me. So, and he had no idea either. He only knew that he won because they direct you one way to go through the tape. So that's the only way he knew that he won. So I'm running through, and I'm like, okay, doing my little celebration, cross the line. And then so immediately you're escorted by one of the volunteers, and then doping came. So I had two people with me. And then I asked the man, I said, how did I place? And he couldn't get a connection on his phone. He said, well, I think third or fourth. And I'm like, no. No, not Masters. Like, yeah. I mean, that would be great, but overall, he's like, yeah, third or fourth. But he didn't want to say.
Right.
Just in case he was wrong. So then we went into the medical, and then, like, I was fine running. As soon as I stopped running, I started shaking, and I was cold. They had to take my wet stuff off, and I just kept asking, honestly, like, what place was I in? Do you know? And so then people were confirming and saying, yes, you were third, and then I walked into the room. Well, no one was there in recovery. Well, that's because the only other people would be the male who was out getting his award, and then Des, who was getting her award, and then Sarah, the other American girl. So the recovery room was completely empty. Everyone's like, congratulations. And I just kept shaking my head. And then I was in shock, right, because of I was just cold and shaking. And then so he's looking after me, and then Jonathan came in, and I said to him, like, they're telling me I'm third, like they're lying to me. And he didn't know. He just kind of shrugged his shoulders. So
you still don't know for sure at this point
what position
you finished in. Wow.
No. And it reminded me of when we had our third child. We had two boys and a girl, and I was shaking from having her, being in labor and everything else, and I wouldn't believe it. And I could see her. It's like, she's born naked, right? So I still wouldn't believe she was a girl. So anyways, eventually I recover. I'm walking around. I go over to Dan, who is Eric Gillis's agent, and I said, because we had kind of hung out with him as well, and I said, Dan, like, do you mind, can you show me on your phone? Because someone had showed me on a board, it was written on there, like in writing. And I said, can I just see on your phone? He, sure, he showed it to me. He scrolled in. There you are. And that's when I believed it.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a story, and what a race. And you looked so, I looked at pictures of you at the finish line. We have one on the iRun website, and you look absolutely soaking wet, but absolutely delighted at the same time as you're crossing the finish line.
Yes, I mean, it's crazy, but I think it's probably, I've never felt so good running a marathon. Because I've run quite a few, I'd have to think back, but
yeah.
I never got to that point where I felt, oh, this is awful, when will it be over? And the fluid and feel like the fuel stations, they just kept coming. Now, my time was slow, for sure. I haven't run that slow in years. I mean, I ran slow last year in London because of my stomach issues, but I just felt great. And it was just that depth I had with my training and being able to handle that. And I completely know that if it was a good day, there's no way I'd have been third. You know, I'm not doing these interviews like, oh, yeah, I knew from the beginning. But
you didn't even know after it was over.
Exactly. People have bad days and they can't handle the conditions. I've been there before, World Championships in Russia. I collapsed with 23 others. But, you know, Monday was my day. It was the weather that worked for me, and I executed. And, yeah, I'm grateful for it.
Well, congratulations again, Krista. It was such an inspiring performance, and you know how many Canadians were thrilled to see you on the podium in Boston. Well done, and thanks for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thanks, Mark. Always a pleasure.
That's Krista Duchesne, shortly after she finished third in the Boston Marathon. Coming up next, John Stanton of The Running Room. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run, presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. There's probably no one in Canada who has inspired more runners than the founder of The Running Room, John Stanton. We had a chance to talk with John about his passion for running and all the events he attends every year. John, welcome to iRun Radio.
Well, great to be with you, Mark.
Now, I know a few weeks ago you were at Around the Bay in Hamilton, and we really should talk about this event more often because it is such a historic race.
You know, it was a thrill being there again. You know, the Around the Bay, for people who have done it, they all know about it, but many people don't realize that it's North America, and not just North America, the America's oldest road race. You know, it's celebrated its 124th anniversary this year. Next year's a big, big year for Around the Bay. They'll be celebrating the 125th anniversary. And, you know, it's been consistent. The only time that it didn't occur was during the war years, when it was on sabbatical during that time. But it's the oldest running race in all the Americas. And it's a thrill to do it. And many people like you who are going to go to Boston use it as a tune-up to Boston because it comes just the right amount out. It's sort of when you're doing that last long run. And the other thing is that the course itself simulates the Boston course as well a little bit. In the first 10K, you have this kind of gradual downhill where you've got to be very careful not to get suckered into running too fast and get caught up in that vacuum of adrenaline and synergy that surrounds the start line. And so you got to hold yourself a little back. And then in the middle part, part of the race, the middle 10K is nice because you're along the lake shore, and that's the part you really enjoy. And then just to test your mettle, they throw the hills and the wind at you in the last 10K to find out what you're truly made of. And then you have a marvelous last couple of K coming into the finish line. You go by the cemetery where, of course, the Grim Reaper is there.
Yeah.
He's traditionally there every year dressed up as the Grim Reaper, and he tries to get you to come into the cemetery. And it gives everybody a chance to chuckle. And next thing they know, they can see the finish line, and they can see the Coliseum and Canada Place, and they head down towards it. And it's a fabulous finish line. As a matter of fact, I think it's probably one of the highlights of any finish line that certainly I attend in the hundreds of races that I go to, because you come in and you come down a tunnel and it gets a little bit dark and you make a quick right turn at the bottom of the tunnel into the Coliseum. You break into the bright lights and the big jumbotron is playing and music is playing and you can hear the announcer call your name. And it's a fabulous experience. And, you know, it's quite often a cooler day that when it's held, because it's held in April. You know, the nice part about the Coliseum is all of your family, your friends are seated there. Even people who finish well ahead of you are still there because they have a chance to sit back and relax and cheer the other runners in. So you got a big crowd cheering in as well. So it's really, you know, it's a particular race, but it's like Boston in that you know, the main thing that comes from after it is it's a very tough race. That a lot of it's challenging from the conditions that you run in, for the course itself, and the time of the year that you run, and the distance is tough. But afterwards, wow, do you have bragging rights that you can share with people?
Sure.
And when you first finish, you know, everybody has the same reaction. They sort of finish and say, oh boy, never again. And then usually it takes them about 15 minutes and a muffin or coffee, get that into them. And then all of a sudden they're thinking, well, if I did a few more hills and maybe trained it a little longer, I might be better prepared for next year. And they come back and they once again do the bay. And the other thing is that because of the distance, the 30-kilometer distance, it's really the perfect tune-up. And, you know, people who have run it, well, they all say the same thing. Once you run around the bay, you're well prepared for any spring marathon. So for people that are planning to run Ottawa or Mississauga or the Toronto Spring Marathons or one of the U.S. Spring Marathons, the timing is superb and it's a great confidence builder. You know that if you can conquer the hills, conquer the elements, conquer the wind, conquer the hills and the Grim Reaper, you can certainly make sure that you
sure.
can do any marathon that's thrown at you.
Yeah. Now, do you ever get tired of being around the finish line of a race? Because I don't, and I'm pretty sure you don't either.
No.
It's so inspiring, isn't
no.
it, to just be around these runners who come in and you know that every one of them has a reason why they're doing it and a story to go with that. It's really incredible, isn't it?
Well, I have, and I call it a privilege to stand around expos and talk to people and get to share in some of the stories that they tell me of how running has changed their life and empowered them and made such a positive influence in the way they enjoy life and the way they've overcome obstacles that have been thrown at them. I've seen people crossing finish lines, and I remember them when they were overweight and struggling to finish a 5K, and I see them coming in a marathon, and I see them break into tears, and it's tears of joy and tears of happiness. You know, they may be a little uncomfortable with the marathon distance, but, you know, when you see them come in, and it doesn't matter whether I'm standing at a 5-kilometer fun run or at, you know, something like Around the Bay or at the Ottawa Marathon or the Army Run, all those events are you're inspired by them. You know, the Army Run is an example when, you know, it's such a brilliant race and that it's so unique and it's such a proud day for Canadians. We're so proud of our men and women in uniform. You see the injured soldiers out there. You know, I stand back, and every time we sing "O Canada" there, it's so emotional, because normally when we sing "O Canada" at the start of a race, people are kind of bobbing around. Some they're still even talking, and yet at the Army Run, when they sing "O Canada," everybody sings along. Everybody's
yeah.
looking at the flag. Everybody's got, you know, a thought in their eye that, you know, they're thinking of. When you start to run and you pass the injured soldiers, I mean, it's so powerful. And all of a sudden, you know, you realize that we do live in the very best country in the world. And we're so fortunate to have those men and women in uniform that are out there defending our rights and our freedoms and being there for us. And you see the sacrifices that they make. You see the sacrifices their families make. And it's truly just a wonderful experience. And, you know, they bill it as not your ordinary race, and it certainly isn't the ordinary race. It's a very unique race with it unites the Army family with the Canadian family. And, you know, I think the Army appreciates each other, and it's a chance for them to celebrate together, but most importantly, the chance for the Army to know that there's a larger family, all Canadians, that are standing behind them, and truly appreciate the commitment that's made by both the men and women who serve and by their families who support them while they're, you know, being deployed or being trained to, and they're, you know, separated during that training.
So, John, I want to ask you, are there any events you've never been to that you wish you could go to? Are there any events you'd still like to run yourself? Because so much of what you do is about the running community. I'm curious to know if you still have any personal goals for yourself when it comes to running.
Well, there is. You know, I've not done the Great Wall of China. And, you know, I've talked to people who have done it and, you know, have gone over and run the Great Wall of China. I think that one would be a cool one to do. That's kind of on my bucket list someday to do that. I've done the Ironman, both the Canadian and the one in Kona. So I don't have any more, you know, thoughts about doing that. And I've never been an ultra runner I ran with my son for 50 kilometers as he was running a 100-kilometer race one time. I paced him for 50 kilometers. And that kind of gave me a lesson that I'm not into an ultra.
That was enough for you, right?
The marathon was... Yeah, 61 marathons was enough for me. And I said, yeah, I think that's enough. I don't think I need to go beyond the marathon distance. But, the thrill for me sometimes is, like on Saturday of this past week, I went for a run with the Friendship Run. And, you know, I started with the group and the lead group. And then we noticed there was a lady kind of struggling at the back. And I slipped back when we got to the turnaround point, and I ran in with her. And it was a delight running with her. She was a woman who was in her probably mid-40s that was, you know, overweight. She's trying to get some pounds trimmed off because she's finally got some time in her life that she can work at her fitness a little bit. And here she was struggling. She was trying to run with the group, and she was trying to do 10 and 1s. And I was running with her, and I said, well, your breathing's a little hard. Why don't we switch it up to maybe 5 and 1s or even 3 and 1s, and we'll do that on the way back. And she came back, and, you know, when she came back, she said, oh, I feel so much better and so good. And, you know, those are the things that inspire me because, you know, I'll see this lady in another year or two or three, and she'll, you know, she was at the around the bay, and she couldn't do any of the events because she couldn't run 5K. So she thought, well, do the 3K fun run, you know, on Saturday morning, and maybe someday I could do the around the bay 30K. I can't wait till the day I get to see her cross the finish line doing a 30K because, you know, you get to share a little bit in that journey knowing what she's gone through. And when she crosses that finish line, you know that how big of a celebration it will be for her. So,
yeah.
You know, that's where I get it. I guess I've turned from athlete more to coach. I think of myself today more as a coach than I do as an athlete. So it's not about what I'm going to accomplish. I want to help other people accomplish their goals. And I want to help other people, you know, achieve some of the special moments I've had the joy of experiencing.
Yeah.
But I want them to experience it. And that's more important to me than my own personal goals.
Coach, mentor, guru, you're all those things, John. And it's a great pleasure to have you on the show with us. Thank you so much for joining us on iRun Radio. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Cheers. Bye now.
That's John Stanton of The Running Room. Coming up next, the incredible story of Tom Longboat. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run. Presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. We're very excited about the next issue of iRun magazine. It's going to feature a cover story about the legendary Indigenous runner and Boston Marathon champion, Tom Longboat. We had a chance to speak with the writer who's putting together the cover story, Ron Johnson. Ron, welcome to iRun Radio.
Yes, thank you. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So what did you learn about Tom Longboat through the process of writing this story?
Oh, I learned so much. Probably like most people, the only things I really knew about Tom Longboat were that he was from Six Nations and that he was a marathon runner of some acclaim. But when I got into it, I mean, the story is just fascinating on a lot of different levels. But just, I guess what he came to represent for Indigenous peoples in the country, I think was the most interesting aspect of his story, that he's a great runner and a great role model, but to Indigenous people, and especially to people on that reserve that celebrate him to this day, he represented freedom, really, because he was, you know, he went to residential school, he escaped from residential school twice, he had to hide out on his uncle's farm, and at that point, you know, if you're Indigenous, you couldn't even leave the reserve, let alone leaving the country to run the Boston Marathon. it's a pretty amazing story.
It is an amazing story. So let's maybe give people, for those people who are not particularly familiar with Tom Longboat, just give us some of the details of his life and his accomplishments, and then we can talk a little more about what he's come to represent to the Indigenous community in Canada.
Sure. So, I mean, he was born in 1887. Like everybody, all youth at that time, under the auspices of the federal government, he was taken away from the rest of his family when he was 15 years old and sent to residential school, along with all his other peers at that time. He escaped, was caught and brought back. He escaped again. And as I said, he ran to his uncle's farm and hid out there. And he showed quite a bit of promise as a runner. And his first big race, I believe, was the Around the Bay race, which is obviously still on to this day and still just as popular.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that he was an early winner of that race? I think he won it in 1906, and then he won a Boston Marathon, and those are both races that are still around to this day. Maybe maybe two of the only races in North America that are still around 110 years later.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be, yes.
Yeah.
And the way it's described, this may have been, exaggerated a bit, but apparently at the race Around the Bay, he showed up. He was still like racing in old sneakers and one of those old cotton bathing suits, you know, that that had like a singlet on the top and kind of loose baggy shorts at the bottom. So that was his get up. And he was, he wasn't taken too seriously because he was an Indigenous person and they didn't know who he was and whatnot. So, but of course, the laughter only lasted momentarily because he burst out there and won by a full over 3 minutes. And that was his first kind of major victory. And he started to gain some notoriety and popularity at that point. And then, yes, he decided to go south of the border and race the Boston Marathon and do obviously very well by winning that, setting a record.
So, and then what happened after that? Now he's a Boston Marathon champion. He's gaining international notoriety. What happened to Tom Longboat after that?
So he came back to Toronto after that. There was a victory parade. And he decided to make a play for the Olympic Games, to run for Canada. And there was a lot of kind of back and forth about whether, because, you know, there was like professional mass races at that time, whether or not he qualified as an amateur to run the Olympic Games. But he squeaked in under a guideline that allowed him to compete. And so he went to the Olympic Games and apparently did quite well, but suddenly became violently ill during the race and had to be taken off. And from what I hear, almost died. And from there, there's been a lot of speculation about whether or not he was given some sort of a stimulant or drugged, or either to, you know, increase his performance or to sabotage his performance.
Wow.
But we will never know for sure at this point. But yes, he competed at the Olympic Games and almost died. One thing interesting about his story is that because of a lot of the anti-Indigenous racism at that time, he was kind of not, his training methods were suspect, and he was kind of thought of as kind of a lazy person and prone to a bit of the booze, that sort of thing. And he had enough of that and said, listen, I'm just going to buy out my contract, which nobody did, let alone an Indigenous athlete. So he bought out his contract and managed his own career and even managed a European tour of some professional races over there, doing quite well for himself. And then the next big, I guess, phase that's well documented is the race at Madison Square Garden versus the British runner Alfred Shrubb, which people love to describe. I want to talk about that.
Yeah, sure. But just before we do, I wanted to reemphasize that point that you made, that there was this perception that he was lazy. And in fact, it was the training methods that he employed, which actually have come to make a lot of sense and were not well regarded at that time, which is that you do a hard day and then you do an easy day. You do a hard day and then an easy day. And people perceive that perhaps by overlaying a stereotype about Indigenous people. they perceived that as laziness on his part, that he wasn't running hard every single day.
Right, yeah. And I spoke with Bruce Kidd, another former Olympic runner for Canada, and he wrote the book on Tom Longboat 30-some-odd years ago. And he was confronted by that image you just talked about this guy kind of squandering his talent. And through character flaws and alcohol and things like that, he was never what he could have been, I guess. But Kidd looked at his record, his race stats and things, and he thought, well, no, this guy was incredibly successful, and he seemed to have a great understanding of his own body. What's going on here? Why is this misconception existing? So he actually went to the reserve and started talking to people there about the whole Iroquois running tradition, which is a whole other, you know, aspect of this that Iroquois and other indigenous, of course, but Iroquois, because Tom Longboat is Iroquois, have this great tradition of distance running because of the distance between villages, and they used runners as a messaging system. And so it was this kind of tradition, this training method that the Iroquois developed over, you know, centuries that informed his running and his incredible performance. So he had an incredible understanding of his own body and what he could do. And, you know, Kidd mentioned to me about the Toronto Star being particularly kind of critical about Longboat's methods and saying, you know, all he does is go out on 20-mile jogs every day sort of thing, or every other day. And apparently was then taken as like a poor training method. But yeah, as we know now, long, slow distance, I guess is what it's called now, is a legit method of training. Sure. for endurance.
So just quickly, tell us about this showdown in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, sure. So basically at that time, professional match racers were all the rage. And they would occur in all the big arenas like Madison Square Garden. And for, you know, a couple of hours, they would run hundreds of laps in the middle of Madison Square Garden, sold out crowd, everybody wagering, live bands playing for entertainment. So the stage was set for Longboat to take on his British nemesis. And everybody took the train down from Toronto and Buffalo and places like that to watch this match because it was so hyped. And so the match got underway, and Shrub, of course, being a shorter distance guy, took off like a shot and tried to get as far ahead of Longboat as possible. And I think he got about 15 laps ahead. And then there was a turning point, of course, and Longboat slowly started reeling him in. Now, legend has it that when he started reeling him in and he knew he was gaining on Shrub, he started to play a bit of a psychological warfare game. So he would come up from behind him and start doing like a casting motion, like with a fishing rod. And he'd start pretending to reel in Shrub, and he'd go by and he'd say stuff. And so eventually he caught him. And like for the last three or four laps, he was ahead. Apparently people were on their feet, standing, screaming, applauding for this. And it was just one of the most popular kind of sporting events of the day, and Longboat was victorious and sealed his legendary status.
Incredible. Well, I can't wait to read more about this in an upcoming issue of iRun. Ron, thank you so much for sharing these stories with us today. Really excited to see the story in the magazine. Thanks for your time.
All right. Yes, thank you very much. All right. Take care.
That's Ron Johnson, who's writing the cover story about Tom Longboat for iRun magazine. And that's it for our show this week. Thank you for joining us. Have a great week.